gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland, and we are here tonight on the 21st of April, 2008, and today, hold on to your seats, folks, you will not believe what happened on this day. Today is the traditional day of the founding of Rome. Yes, we're going back to, now guess the year. I know I often ask people to guess the year in history. You'd have to have been paying attention in world history, ancient history, in high school to remember this one. Yes, 753 BC, that is correct. Anyway, we don't have to go that far back for things that happened, because it was on this date in 1998 that astronomers figured out that they discovered a new family of planets orbiting a star pretty close to us, only 220 light years away. A light year is 5.6 trillion miles, so that's actually pretty close in stellar terms. And it was on this day in 1972 that the astronauts of Apollo 16 walked on the surface of the moon. In any case, it's time for us to move on to a few little items in the news. And we always start with the lighter side. I don't always like to say lighter because there can be some heavy news here. But I do like to deal with the non-political stuff first. And some of it, of course, touches on the political. It's hard not to. So Deborah Jean Palfrey was convicted of, well, a whole variety of counts, but she was convicted of running a prostitution ring. She had claimed she had run a high-end erotic fantasy service. But, of course, all the hookers and all the Johns said, hey, I was there for the sex. So she was convicted, and that took place last week. The Simpsons have angered South Americans again. So you may or may not know this, but the Simpsons, the TV show, plays around the world. And when they do, sometimes things that don't raise any kind of a scandal here raise a scandal elsewhere. So here's how it went. Here is Homer's buddy, Carl Carlson, having a conversation in Moe's Tavern about their choice of political candidates this year. And Carl says to Homer and the gang, I'd really go for some kind of military dictator like Juan Perón. And of course, he was elected by the Argentinians three different times. And he goes on to say, when he disappeared you stayed disappeared. And then Lenny chimes in, plus his wife was Madonna, of course, from the movie Evita. Anyway, that has not gone over well in Argentina. So they consider, in some countries, in some places, they consider The Simpsons inappropriate television, whereas they can put on Baywatch Hawaii or, you know, a Baywatch with Pamela Anderson in a bikini, and that's just fine, wholesome entertainment. It's a crazy world out there. And speaking of crazy, let's stick with this issue of sex and sexy. India got its first dose of NFL cheerleaders, our own Washington Redskin cheerleaders, in white go-go boots, yellow spangled short shorts, and yellow bikini tops, took their pom-poms to Bangalore, India, and there was a sold-out 55,000-person cricket match in the heat of summer, and the Redskins cheerleaders are there on the sidelines cheerleading. And apparently what sold out the match, because cricket's an unusual game. It's like baseball, only slower. It takes days to play a game sometimes. And so the cheerleaders were pretty scandalous by Indian standards, and so they drew this huge audience, which, you know, on, I guess the only comment I want to make about this is that we sometimes don't think about the impact we have on other cultures. You know, we export our movies, our TV shows. There was a time when a poll was done in the 80s when Dallas was playing in Europe, in Eastern Europe. There was a poll done, and most Eastern Europeans thought that Americans all lived in the kinds of houses that J.R. Ewing and his family owned, and they all thought that Americans were hot-tempered and all this other stuff went on in the show Dallas. So, like it or not, how we're portrayed in TV is what the rest of the world tends to think about us and in the mass media. So, you know, this doesn't get mentioned very much, and even the religious right doesn't seem to have any stake in this issue in this country. They want to rail against Hollywood, but one of the biggest problems that Muslim societies have against Western cultures is the casual attitude about sex and women. You know, it is true that they subjugate their women, and basically it's the woman's job to stay completely covered from head to toe so that men aren't tempted, and that's not right, but the principle is that they actually hold their men to a higher standard. Now, I'm not saying everybody achieves that standard, but they hold their men to a higher standard than we hold ours. And so they see our women prancing around on TV, in movies, and the Washington Redskins cheerleaders going to Bangalore, and you end up with this perception that America is a decadent culture and would corrupt them. And, of course, we don't see it that way, and yet there's a whole element in our country that rails against Hollywood and wants to blame it on liberals, of course. That's a whole nother issue we've discussed on this show many times, the fact that it ain't liberals. Liberals aren't the reason we have partial nudity and a lot of sexual innuendo on TV and a lot of murders on TV, pseudo-murders on TV shows and movies. No. The capitalist system is the reason. This is what gets ratings, and so people do more of it. And you could remove all the liberals that may be in charge of movie studios or TV studios or TV shows and replace them with conservatives, and you'd have the same content. This is the free enterprise system that gives us this content, and I will not sit here and allow right-wingers to badmouth the free enterprise system. We've covered this before. Anyway, the other interesting thing that happened this week is the Pope was in town. And the Pope got here a week ago, and I'm always amazed at the huge outpouring that comes every time the Pope comes to town. Because, you know, America is only 25% Catholic, and so there's not a lot of... You wouldn't think there'd be a lot of support for the Pope outside of Catholicism. People like John Hagee, a Protestant leader, considers the Catholic Church, he doesn't say a cult, I forget what he called it, it wasn't a gutter religion, but an apostate church, that's what it is. Basically, it's a phony church and it's useless. And yet, when the Pope comes to town, it's more than Catholics rallying around this visit from a major religious leader. He caused a big to-do. And so it was especially strong here in Washington because he started his trip a week ago here in Washington and did a mass at the new stadium in Washington, National Stadium. And then he ended with a mass in Yankee Stadium. This is the last year for Yankee Stadium. The house that Ruth built will be torn down at the end of this year. And the Yankees next year will play across the street in the new Yankee Stadium, the house that, I don't know, Steinbrenner built? No, the citizens of New York built. That's how it works. And so the Pope then ended with Dick Cheney said goodbye to him on the tarmac at the airport, and he's back home. He did meet with some representatives of the, some representatives of the clergy sex abuse scandal while he was here. They set it up with five particular people from the Boston Archdiocese. And, of course, they caught a lot of flack for it. They kept it secret till the meeting was over. They claimed it was for the privacy and the dignity of the people who were harmed by the scandal. And it's true, there would have been a lot of press and a lot of questions, and it would have been a media circus. On the other hand, all the people that didn't know about it who were also injured by this scandal, that is, abused, or they've been affected, or their spouses or family have been affected, were hurt that they didn't know about it. So you can't please most people. You can't please all people. But the Pope did address it, not just there, but a number of different times. So on one level, dealt with. On another level, there's dissatisfaction among the people who were abused. And, the thing that bothers me, and again, you're talking to someone who is steeped in Catholicism, raised Catholic, came from a very Catholic family, was in the seminary as a young man, am now a lapsed Catholic, don't profess to be a practicing Catholic, and not worthy of Christ's standards, that he set the bar pretty dang high for human behavior, but I still have brothers and sisters who are not only devout. I've got a sister who's a nun, St. Joseph's nun and a missionary in Brazil and lives life on her own terms more than virtually anybody I know. And a brother, an older brother, who's a theologian and a very knowledgeable Catholic. And, you know, it's a mature, his is a mature faith, as is my sister's. These are not knee-jerk believers in everything the church says or the Pope says. Their faith is deep and they've looked at it multiple times. So anyway, the other piece about this that I wanted to say, having prefaced it with the fact that I know a little bit about the Catholic Church, is that one of the things that bothers the survivors and the critics of the abuse scandal is the fact that, A, it's taken the Pope so long to get to this point. He waited until a trip to the U.S. to deal with it, and this could have been dealt with 10 years ago. When this scandal first broke. Well, actually, the scandal broke before that, but it could have been dealt with a long time ago. Also, as long as Cardinal Law is still serving honorably in the Vatican, in Rome, right, he was removed because he was one of the main people that covered up the clergy abuse scandal. He moved priests from parish to parish who they knew were abusing people. And you could argue 20, 30 years ago, they thought it could be cured, et cetera, they thought people could stop. We now know better. But they kept it quiet, right? He kept it quiet, kept it hush-hush until it exploded. And the Vatican rewarded him in the end by, yes, he got removed from there, but he was given a primo assignment in Rome, right? There are four particular churches that the Vatican oversees in Rome, these big parishes, and he was assigned to one of them. And that's just incomprehensible to me. He was a major enabler of the abuse scandal, by covering it up. You know, if the government treated churches differently, he and other people would be locked up for covering up crimes. But because of the difference we've got between church and state here, the government and the law, the arm of the law, handles them with kid gloves. And I'm not saying it should be any different. I'm just saying you have to police yourself if you're going to have that special status. And bottom line here is this is an argument for more input from the laity. And what's interesting about that is that the laity have wanted to have more say, and the church, of course, resists that. They want their power structure to continue to dominate, typically. That's true of any organization. But I guarantee you, if lay people had had more of a voice, and the bishop had relied on a circle of lay people, a board of trustees, a committee, and said, look, we've got this issue. What do you think we should do? These people are parents. These people have children. They would never have allowed the bishops to move priests around and hope they wouldn't abuse children again. That's not how parents operate. And so it's a great argument for having more lay involvement. Of course, in general, the structure, the powers that be within any organization don't want to hear you should give up some power to some of your members. That's just not usually how it works. Anyway, there's a sad note that's worth mentioning here, and it's a death this past week. On Friday of last week, no, actually, gosh, it goes back to Thursday of last week, Danny Federici died. He was the keyboard player for Bruce Springsteen, played in the E Street Band, and had been with Springsteen since his early days on the Jersey Shore. Born in Flemington, New Jersey, a town I've been to many times because I've lived in New Jersey twice. And I've got a good friend that family of friends that live in right next to Flemington. And Danny Federici died. He's had a long bout with cancer. It's gone on several years, and he passed away. Now, he was playing with Springsteen just a month ago. So this is a a guy cut down in his prime. He was 58, but hey, I'll be 58 this year too. So I got to tell you, that is way too young to go. And so we're going to head to our break with a little bit of The Boss.
I'm You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America on the TAFS radio network.
Okay, we are back on The Andy Finn Show. And let me continue for a minute with a little bit about the Pope's visit. One of the interesting things that comes up from this Pope, of course, he was Cardinal Ratzinger, and he was he's an intellect within the Vatican. He always has been, and so knowledgeable, well, widely written and widely read. So one of the things that always gets me about this Pope's approach, though, is he talks about the influence of secularism. And of course, if you watch, listen to conservative radio or talk to, listen to somebody like Bill O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News, he's always talking about the secular progressives as though all liberals are secular, and that secularism is somehow this dangerous force in the world. Let's go back and recap where secularism comes from. The intellectual thought in Western thought was dominated by the church until about the 1600s, 1700s. It is true that the Catholic Church was the keeper of knowledge. Monks wrote, hand-wrote out all the books and manuscripts and kept the knowledge, whether it was from the Greeks or from what civilization, the Romans or whoever, and passed it on. But then the Gutenberg Press came along, and we ended up with the ability to mass produce books. So knowledge got into the hands of more people. And then we had the Enlightenment, starting in the 17th century. And the Enlightenment really is a change from the church dominating thought to another force coming along. Right? What we had until then was the church and then rulers, kings, queens, people that ran countries. And the church was quite powerful and held sway over a lot of them. Well, the rise of science is the big component that comes out of the Enlightenment, along with the rise of concepts of democracy. It's where our founding fathers got their start and their ideas from the philosophers that wrote in the decades and centuries that preceded the founding of America. But science is the big component I want to focus on here, starting with Copernicus and Galileo. What people realized was that empirical observation of the world stood a better chance of telling us how things really work than listening to the church. And so terra firma, the idea that the earth was the center of the universe, gave way to the Copernican theory, and modified by Galileo and then extended this idea that the earth was not the center of the universe, that first the sun was the center, and then they realized that, you know, the sun is just a star, and there's a lot of stars out there, so the universe is a lot bigger than we thought, and we are definitely not the center of it. Well, that eroded some of the church's authority, because they'd been teaching for 1600 years that they understood how the world worked. And it turned out science was a much better explainer of how the world works. Then we had the development of medicine, chemistry, physics, and science gave us all the developments we've had in engineering, from the, you know, building of skyscrapers and the Industrial Revolution and machines and then cars and computers and roads and highways and bridges, really sophisticated technology, skyscrapers. It all works. And science has proven time and time again in areas like engineering and physics and in areas like medicine that it has a lot of the answers. So the rise of science managed to challenge the church. And the rise of secularism comes along with that, in part. So what the Pope is really concerned about is relativism. And on that score, he shares quite a bit with somebody like Sean Hannity, just to use an example. The Fox News anchor who runs a show nominally called Hannity and Combs, but it's a showcase for his conservative views, and Alan Combs is essentially the well-liked and non-threatening liberal who occasionally challenges but always seems willing to play the role of the Washington Generals to Sean Hannity's Harlem Globetrotters. We'll give you a good game, but we'll always let you win. And so Hannity, I've heard him on his radio show, which he's on during the day on one of the most widely listened to conservative talk show hosts, and I've heard him on his TV show enough to know that he is scared to death of relativism. He thinks that it's a huge
huge blunder. Now let's back up and talk about relativism for just a minute. There are three levels of intellectual development when people start studying, whether you go to college, high school, then college, or you just read widely. What you learn is that you start with black and white thinking. We teach our children there's right and wrong, there's yes and no, there's true and false, there's black and white. And that's all kids can understand at the simplest level when they're very young. But at some point, they start understanding the gray areas, that there are gray areas. Mommy tells a little white lie on the phone, and you say, but Mommy, I thought you're always supposed to tell the truth. Well, you'll understand when you're older, or you explain it to them then. You didn't want to hurt the people's feeling, but there's no way you're going over there for dinner. So you did told a little white lie. And that's when kids start understanding there are gray areas. That takes us into the realm of the second level of intellectual development, multiplicity. And there are a number of stages of multiplicity. It's been laid out by researchers who've looked at how people's cognitive structures change. But basically, the second level of intellectual growth is multiplicity, the realization that there are multiple points of view. Now, at the earliest stages of the multiplicity, we tend to think, yeah, there's multiple points of view, and my view's right. And then you realize, well, it depends on your assumptions. But my view's still right because my assumptions are right. And then you start to realize that there's a huge range of views in the world, and there's many questions for which there's more than one right answer. Now you're starting to grow intellectually. Well, the third and final layer of intellectual development is relativism. And relativism is the understanding that knowledge itself is contextual. That is, it depends on your assumptions, and it depends on the particular context you're looking at, whether or not you believe a certain perspective on the world. And, of course, the physical sciences that we got from the Enlightenment, the physics, biology, chemistry, and the scientific method, were all geared along the idea that there was truth to be uncovered, and science could do it with empirical evidence. Unfortunately, it got a little sticky when we got to relativity theory, as an example. It turns out time's not a constant, and Einstein proved, to the bewilderment of most people at the beginning of the 20th century, that, in fact, time passes at a different rate depending on how fast you're traveling through the universe. If you're traveling extremely fast, approaching the speed of light, time slows down, and at the speed of light, time stands still, although mass becomes infinite, so we don't know what all that means. In any case, the principle is that relativism is the highest level of intellectual development, the realization that the knowledge you have depends on your perspective. And so our knowledge of our cultures, our knowledge of a lot of things depends on the point of view we start with and the culture we're born into. And now, it gets tricky when you take it to theology and religious and spiritual beliefs, because people want to believe there are not just that God is an absolute, but that morals are an absolute. And this is what the Pope finds fault with. Okay, so the easiest form of relativism to attack is moral relativism, this idea that there are no immutable principles or truths when it comes to morals. There's no absolute right and wrong. All right. Now, I'm not going to make the case for moral relativism here today, although there's a case to be made. The simplest way out of this is to say, well, I believe in natural law, that there are things we can agree on that are a part of nature, that, you know, you don't kill your children, you don't kill your fellow man, you don't steal, covet their goods, all the basic things that are in the Ten Commandments, perhaps. And so that gets around it at one level. But intellectual relativism is clearly with us, and most conservatives have trouble with that concept as well. So the Pope is really swimming upstream here in his battle to hold on to absolutes. Because if we've discovered anything in the last 300 years, all the things we thought were absolute, even in the world of physics, it turns out we've yet to discover anything that we can prove is absolute. You have to take it on faith. And that's what the Pope wants you to do. So we could go a lot deeper into this, but I'm going to cap it there, because we're going to want to take a break. And when we come back, talk a little bit about what else is going on in the world.